Hello, it's Toby and Dean in Israel on Gaydio, the beat of Gay UK. I'm going to introduce you to somebody now that you'll probably, whose voice you'll probably hear a few times whilst we're here. His name is Pini, that's right, isn't it?
That's right, absolutely right.
Is that your full name?
It's a kind of a shortcut for friends, so since we are friends already, it's Pini. You can call me Pino as well, like okay. Pinot Noir, so like it's that. Easier for you to remember.
You are our guide over the next few days whilst we're here in Israel. Listeners to Gaydio might have heard of Tel Aviv before. It's probably quite an obvious choice maybe for particularly gay travellers to Israel. It's known as having a massive pride festival, but perhaps not where we're going to be spending most of our time, which is in Eilat.
So we will take you, first of all, welcome to Israel, and we will take you in to the south, the very south side of Israel, a little bit out of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, with a lovely scenario. We will start with the city of Eilat. This is the most southern city of Israel, just facing the Red Sea. We will take you down to the Dolphin Reef. You will spend a lovely time with the dolphins. You will swim with them.
And, are you okay with that, Dean?
Well, I'm going to have to be, I think.
Dean's a bit funny with fish.
Well, underwater as well. Not really sure
Dean,
like that.
Dean, I promise you will fall in love with the dolphins. It's an amazing creature. And then we'll take you, like, we're surrounded by deserts. So we'll take you first thing to make a camel ride in the desert, like in the old times. Later on, another surprise that you already should know about it is the fact that we'll take you to the modern camel, which is a jeep. So we'll make a tour on a jeep, 4x4, for a lovely viewpoint on the landscape of the desert. Maybe even we'll see the side of Egypt and Jordan and the Red Sea from the top. We still have some more visits, interesting visits in our program. For example, the kibbutz, the Jewish common settlement together that make miracle in the desert, and we will see different and very unique agriculture system. We'll spend the time in a very good restaurant in Eilat by night, and then we'll try to get following the nightlife of Eilat, which is really a lot of, you know, it's a city for fun, a lot of clubs and bars and bands and live music and whatever you want you can find there.
It's more like it.
You can't take the dolphins with you.
No, leave them there anyway.
We can show you some private yacht as well. We have some wealthy people in Eilat, so they really have a good time over there. Then on our last day, we will cross the desert, the Arava Valley, which is a long and narrow valley. We'll stop by a place called Timna, which is a copper mine, and you will see the ancient copper mine in the world that we know about. Amazing story how to produce the copper from a rock to a liquid copper. You will see it. Maybe you will have some jewelry out of copper.
There's a lot to do there.
What point do we sleep?
Yeah, in quite a short period of time, it's going to be certainly busy. Have you got any tips as well for us as travellers in Israel? Kind of, I've already asked for a cheeseburger, which was a mistake.
Oh, you avoid the kosher restaurants, first of all. You have enough options for all of you. The main issue is, like, you have to tell the local what you like, and you have solution. We have any kind of needs for everyone. And I can tell you, the local people, beside the tourist business, the local people are willing to help, most of them speaking English. We love tourists, we welcome tourists, and we want you to have the best time in Israel. So we want you to come back, first of all, and then maybe to be our ambassador then in Europe.
Amazing. Well, I hope so. I hope so too. Really looking forward to it. And if you're wanting to discover more about Israel, just head over to their website, which is goisrael.com. Hello. It's Gaydio in Eilat. Toby and Dean with you. We've just got on board a jeep. I think it's a Land Rover, actually. I think it's from England. But the terrain is far from England. It's starting to get a bit bumpy,
I don't know how
actually.
Long we're going to last on this for. It's falling out.
We're in a jeep, so it's got like kind of open back. I'm reliably informed that the seatbelts won't help us much if we were to topple over. So I hope that's not going to happen. We've got a driver. I don't know his name. Find out his name, Dean.
What's your name?
Naftali.
Naftali.
Thank you and welcome to Israel.
Thank you. Naftali.
He was singing us a little song earlier to get us in the mood.
Naftali, can we have a little song again, please? What should we start with?
Rolling, rolling, rolling down the river.
Keep the wheel, you keep hold of the wheel, we'll do the singing.
Yeah, that's a great idea, other than the fact that he's now papping. That's what needs to be staring.
This isn't going to end well, is it? Oh my god, look at that rock right in front. Danny, you want, you want?
I tell you what, we'll let him concentrate for a minute. We might come back to you when we've found somewhere to stop. Right now, behind me, you can hear the voice of Naftali. Is that right? Is that right? Yeah. Naftali is a Jeep driver today. Tell me a little bit about where you've taken us.
Now we are in a little mountain that the army use it. From here we can see very good Egypt border, the new order, border, and... of course, a beautiful view, very nice place, and we can see exactly the color of the mountains, that we have black mountains, we have red mountains, we have there a pink, we have many kinds of mineral here, we have mangan, we have a black granite, we have a red granite, we have... glasses, stones, and of course we can see that we had here before a very big sea, the Tetri, from Elat to Yamatihon, Kenya, the Mediterranean.
Look!
Anyway,
I was wondering when that was going to happen.
Yeah. Anyway, like,
for a moment, I thought you were going all serious.
Anyway,
on me
anyhow, how? And we can see that it was here a sea, but Cain, do it again.
Cain, do it again.
Yeah, Cain. Anyway.
It's all right, you keep singing. So right now...
it's
fine. Yeah, it's done. That's thank you, I think. Oh, we're still going. Now I've taken the microphone away. Are you still talking? No, you're all right. Yeah, okay.
Oh, thank you.
So we're on the top of this amazing place. There's just rocks all around me. It looks like... It really does look like something from a film. I'm sure like an episode of Doctor Who has been filmed here before. And you can... we're right at the... So the most point, I think, of Eilat in Israel, which is borders with Egypt. You can literally see the border there.
And as we were driving up here, it was all rocks.
I mean, you're calling it driving. I don't know whether, you know, a driving licence would be awarded for that. But
yeah, as we were driving up here, everything was all in pebbles and stones and sand. And then all of a sudden, for the last 2 miles, it was a perfect road.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere. You're going over this kind of really rocky terrain. And then suddenly, in the middle of nowhere, there is... a perfectly tarmacked road with a McDonald's at the end of it. There's no McDonald's, I made that bit up.
So is this road the border? Is that the actual border between us and Egypt?
I would imagine the border is that fence over there,
right,
that you can see.
But does that
hold
come
on,
off
we'll ask an expert. Hold on, Pinny. Yes, we were just asking about the border. So the border itself will be that fence over there, right?
Yeah, but the issue is not the fence. The issue is the desert, the scenario, the quiet, you feel the air outside. It's really pastoralic. Like, I can camp here just for...
Have you camped here?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah, many times.
I'm glad you didn't make us do that.
Like,
for
if you're under pressure on a big city and you want to go out, don't go out for a city hotel or something. Go to the nature.
Really?
And you have 1 million-star hotel.
Yeah.
Make your camp, make your fire, good black coffee.
1 million-star hotel, yeah, like that. Like you just
this.
Look up into the sky and there's a million stars.
It's a great one.
Right.
You're right, it's very peaceful up here, and there's, you know, unlike a lot of tourist areas, I suppose, there's nobody up here. We're the only people at the top of this. In fact, I think tourist buses aren't allowed up here, are they?
Not allowed. Not allowed, and they cannot cross part of the road that we did with the 4-on-4.
Yeah.
But you can hike if you're in a good shape.
We only just managed it with the 4x4, to be honest. You're going to make me go back in that now to get down, aren't you?
Yeah, we have a lovely safe driver. This is his
first day of driving.
Have we met him yet?
It's my first day, sure.
It's Gadio in Eilat, Israel. I'm Toby Whitehouse. Dean B's with me as well. Sat in an amazing location right now. It's called Dolphin Reef, Eilat. I'm with one of the instructors. Instructors? I don't know. Would that be your... Yeah? What's your name, sorry?
Advat.
Advat. I'm told that that name in Hebrew means something to do with waves. Is that right?
It's a ripple.
It's a ripple of the wave. Okay. Yeah. And our instructor that we were with earlier, his name was Elmog. Is that coral?
Yeah.
So does it mean that you have to have a name associated with the sea to work here?
No, that's just a destiny for some of us, but it doesn't have to do with the name. Just loving the sea and the animals.
Yeah, and I can see why you do. Tell me a little bit about this place and what visitors can do here.
Okay, so we have a very unique place. There's a group of four dolphins living here. All of them were born here, one male and three females. Basically, we try to keep it as natural as possible with less interference as possible, so people can actually see dolphins as they are in the nature. Because the dolphins that live here are maintaining the social life. They play, they hunt, they fight, they mate. And during all those activity, the people can actually see them while they're interacting. There's a pier going inside the dolphins' area, their home, and the people can see it closer than usual. Another thing is that the dolphins are totally free. They actually can go outside wherever they want. They go out usually for hunting, playing, say jumping.
I've just seen a dolphin jump in front of me in the sea.
So that's what I'm talking about natural behaviors. These are the most beautiful things you can see here. It's not a show, it's just a dolphin interacting right now.
And that's really important, right? Because I think, you know, when I was first told that I was coming here, I was a bit like, oh, what's that going to be like? There's going to be dolphins in pens, and I hate the idea of that. But this is totally different. Like you say, they can come as they go. They're not trained to come up to people or anything like that. No. That's a totally different environment, isn't it?
It is. It's actually, basically, we're here for them. They're not here for us. And they're telling us what to do, not the other way around. So if a dolphin approaches me, we're here the whole day offering ourselves. If a dolphin approaches me, I'm looking at their body language. And because we know them very well, I can just tell what he wants and then I cooperate with him. So basically, he tells me what to do and not the other way around.
Yeah.
And all the other thing is just watching them, interacting with one another.
Yeah.
We sit very close to the people. The people can sit and put their hands and legs in the water. The communication that we have with the dolphins is body language. So when you put something in the water, you're actually offering a dolphin a touch. If a dolphin comes close enough and he chooses to be touched, it's okay to touch them. But it's just an offer. It takes time. It doesn't always happen because you have to remember that people that are visiting here are strangers. And just as it takes us time to come close to strangers, the same thing. But still, they can see them very close. People can go diving or swimming with them like you've done. You went swimming. There's a possibility of diving as well. And people who are doing so is actually just watching the dolphins in the natural environment. When you go inside the water, you're not allowed to touch them because you're strangers and you're inside their homes. So out of respect, it's okay.
I don't want strangers touching me.
Exactly.
They don't want strangers touching them. I get that.
And the difference from the pier is that you can't move when you're on the pier. So if a dolphin approaches close enough, he knows exactly where he is, so it's okay. But when you go, once you go in the water, you have to respect them and just let them do whatever they want.
Yeah. I've got to say, and it is an amazing experience when you kind of go down there and the first time, and I don't know if there's I suppose you can't guarantee that you're going to see dolphins or anything because it's up to them whether they come or go, but it's that feeling when you just see a dolphin sort of, you look down and a dolphin's coming up underneath you and you go, wow, this feels so alien in a way, not to you do it every day, but to me, I've never done that before, and I've got to say the temptation is massive to touch them, but obviously you're not allowed, and I think it's really good that you're not. And I guess you've built up trust with them over years, I suppose, haven't you?
The main thing here is that the relationship between us and them is based only on trust, love, and knowing each other,
right?
Nothing else. People who start working in my department as caretakers have to start working somewhere else first to build that relationship. So any job that the dolphins can see you and you can see them and you can build this relationship. So otherwise, underwater photographer, diving instructors, swim leaders. We even had someone with us that worked on the pier just watching the people that are visiting, and they saw him for a year and a half every day. He came early every morning, and they build a relationship with him. Just by seeing him again and again. Now there's another
job. Wow, look at that.
You can actually hear the people. There he goes again.
That's just, and they're not trained to do that. That's because they want to do it.
Jumping is body language.
Right.
It's talking for them. They communicate either with voices, language, and body language, like us. So jumping can express happiness, trying to get attention from other dolphins. In the middle of chasing, they can jump, or if they have a scratch. So the big difference from any other place is, first of all, they decide when to learn. Secondly, the behaviors will always be things from nature. You won't see anyone riding dolphins here or dolphins jumping through hoops. And thirdly, the reward is only hand clapping and stroking. It's never food. So you know they want to do it and they don't have to do it. The dolphins that live here are not depending on us when it comes to food. They hunt their own food. They don't need me for the food. So if you see the dolphins next to us, it's because they want to be there and they don't have to be there. It's their choice. That's another big difference.
You've got a brilliant job.
I do. Haven't
you?
Not complaining.
That's a great job, isn't it, to do this? Should we do it again? Again.
Yay.
Thanks ever so much for showing us around.
Enjoy.
And for introducing us into your friends. It's Scadio in Israel. I'm Toby Whitehouse. Dean's with me still on our travels around Eilat. We're not actually in Eilat at the moment. We've come out to what I think is called a kibbutz, if that's right. And hello, what's your name?
My name is Inbal.
Inbal, is that correct?
And the name of the place is Kibbutz Elifaz.
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 Okay. And what is a kibbutz?
Kibbutz is a community that decided to live together, to share their profits, to make their businesses together, and to use the power of the together, the power of a lot of people. We all work very hard, grow dates and pomelos.
Oh, you're just cutting a fruit in front of me, and I have put it on Dean's head as a kind of hat. That's beautiful, Dean.
Yeah, it's a W. Like,
thank you.
It smells like oranges.
So you've given me a fruit here, which is called what?
The fruit called pomelo.
Pomelo.
Yeah.
It looks kind of like a grapefruit or something like that.
It's
inside.
Not a grapefruit.
But
it's
it looks
a
like
different
it.
Fruit.
Yeah.
It looks like a grapefruit. It's not. It's a unique fruit. It's origin, mekori. It's an origin fruit. It's not a pomelo.
It's its own.
A grapefruit and something.
Yeah.
It's a pomelo.
Can we eat it?
Yeah, of course you can eat it. It's very sweet. And
come on,
very juicy.
What's it like?
Tastes like an orange.
It tastes like an orange.
I think I had some of this for breakfast this morning, actually.
Yes, you did?
I think so, yeah.
It's a great fruit, and it's not that normal to grow citrus in the desert. We are in one of the hottest and driest areas in the world, and citrus need humid, and they need water.
Because to tell you a little bit about the environment we're in, we're basically in the middle of a desert. It's very dry, very hot. And if you were to be told that, you know, they're growing watermelons and citrus fruit here, you'd be like, how on earth is that happening? It's someone. So there must have been a very clever person at the start of all this that worked out that we could do it.
The first one that thought about agriculture was the first Prime Minister of Israel, okay. Ben Gurion.
Yeah.
But he didn't even dream that it will be in the southern Arava. He thought that Eilat and the Arava will be a way for the sea. It's an open sea. And merchandise won't pass through Suez Canal, through Egypt, and will go directly through Israel. And the other thing that he thought that Eilat and the area will build on is the copper.
Copper.
We have copper mines here. Timna knows, you will hear about it later, but Timna have copper mines. And that was the idea of living here. And then we got the dates 35 years ago, and that gave a push, a huge push to the agriculture. And from dates, we moved to watermelon and melon, and then tomatoes. And today we are growing everything, mango, avocado, flowers and herbs and spices, different spices.
Yeah.
Amazing what people here in the Arava
are
doing from nothing, from nothing.
Yeah.
And the energy you will see later, we're getting from the sun. We are doing more than 100 times the energy that Kibbutz Elifaz need.
Wow.
So we're using the efforts, the sources that
we
do
have. Energy as well.
Yeah, we're selling the energy, and we're also using it for cooling the greenhouses, And it's a round growth, you know, you chill it and grow it in the same place with the same water, without any effort from the outside.
That's genius. And have a bit more fruit. We're at Camel Ranch Ilat with Tali. Hi, Tali.
Yes.
Yeah, good to meet you. Tell me a bit about this place. What have you got on offer for visitors here?
We have short camel rides, about 10 minutes, half hour. We have longer rides, about an hour and a half and 2 hours, with hospitality of pita bread that is made on the spot and nice sweet tea. We also have donkey chariots. Rides around here in this beautiful desert. The season is great, the weather is wonderful.
I've not been on a camel before, so I don't think I'll be doing a 4-hour trek just yet, but we'll give it a go, I'm sure. I'm sure people are wondering about the welfare of the animals, you know, how the animals kept and stuff here. Are they happy animals?
About happiness, I'm not sure animals walk this way. They're satisfied. They're satisfied with the food. I hope they're satisfied with the saddles I'm building for them. I cannot show you over here in the radio, but we have a lot of cushions and blankets to protect the camel as well as your bum when you're sitting on them. We try to make it comfortable for the rider as well.
Yeah.
Okay, but first of all, for the animal.
Any tips for people doing a camel trek? Any advice that you'd give us?
Relax, but don't fall asleep.
That's good advice.
Yes.
And yep, he made us get on a camel. It happened. Myself and the microphone were parted for a second, and it ended up in the reliable hands of my boyfriend Dean.
Right, so have I got to get on this one now?
Yes, this is Naomi.
Right, what's it called?
Naomi.
Naomi. Right, okay, bear me a second. So which way am I going?
Slowly.
Anyway?
Yes.
Okay, so both legs?
Just one. Full
one
stuff.
Leg. Okay. Oh yes. God. One, oh my God. Oh, it's moving. Pull
you
it back
know
in.
Why she's moving?
Why?
She's alive.
Okay. Oh my.
When they're not moving, I start to get scared.
Okay.
I want your leg over here.
Okay.
Hold
okay.
on when she's jumping. Okay.
No, sure.
No, I'm joking.
Oh my God.
I'm joking. Can I take this from you? Your bag. Thank you. Did you pack by yourself? Somebody give you something to eat? You have something sharp inside.
Something.
You want something?
It's swaying.
What was yours called again?
Moldy.
Naomi.
Oh, Naomi, sorry.
Yeah. Now, do you know what this is called? This little strip of camels.
A camel yard.
No, like the group of camels.
No.
That are all joined together. It's called a caravan.
A what?
Caravan of camels. So back in the day,
yeah.
You'd have like the way of crossing the desert would
okay.
be on camel. That's, you know, the only way you could cross it. They can last for weeks, I think, without water, not because of the humps. That's actually fat in there, but they can last for weeks without water. So if you were crossing the desert, you'd want to be on a camel, and you'd be doing this to kind of sell your goods, whatever they might be, spices and stuff, to whoever's at the end of the desert. And you'd do that. You'd cross in a caravan of camels, and at times research says it could be up to 1,000 camels in a caravan.
When you said a caravan of camels before, I thought you said, is this what you mean?
Not like the caravans you get on the motorway.
So 1,000
not caramels.
Oh my God, I'm gonna wobble off here. Toby, I'm not straight.
Toby and Dean in Eilat, Israel. We're at the part of Eilat, which is, it's kind of a new promenade area.
Alright.
Whose show is this? Sort of promenade area where they've got loads of bars and restaurants and stuff, to my left hand side, the sea in front of me, and then on the right hand side is kind of towards the older part of Eilat, and there's kind of a few fairground rides and stuff that have I wouldn't say taken our fancy. I'm not sure if that's particularly the right term.
Definitely not my terms, anyway.
You're not really big into rides,
no,
are you?
No, I don't like anything that spins. I don't like anything that goes really fast, and certainly don't like things that go up and down.
So what we've done is found the Fireball, which is a ball, as the name suggests, that spins round, propels you up into the air, and then pulls you down again. So all the things that Dean doesn't like.
Thank you.
Yeah. We thought it was called the Rocket Ball. It's called the Fireball. I'm not sure which is preferable.
Yaniv, Fireball, Ilat.
I also saw a little slogan at the bottom, which says,
shoot your ass.
Oh, right, okay.
Fancy go?
This is a bad idea, I think, but I'm going to try and record it. If I lose my phone, we're being strapped in by two strong-looking gents. Are you ready? I don't even know what to expect. I've not seen anyone else do this. Oh, the smoke. Oh, we're rocking backwards. Oh my god, I'm not trying to fall. Oh my god. Oh, it's gonna go. It's gonna go. Any second now. Maybe it's broken.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! Back down. Oh my god! You can see the whole of Eli in front of me.
It's not so bad all this now, it was a bit going up.
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Right, I want to get off now.
You can't get half up in the air. Okay. Oh, look at that, you see all the lights.
Oh, I don't mind it now.
You
look
right,
nice. Phew, they don't give you any warning, do they?
No, but how'd you get down? Do we just stay up here now and hope for the best?
I was hoping that they'd give me a little bit of warning. I mean, the smoke.
Well, they strapped you in, and what did you expect?
It's Gaydio in Israel. I'm Toby Whitehouse. Dean B with me still. And right now we're at Timna Park. Our tour guide Pinny's with us. Pinny, tell me a little bit about where we stood right now.
We're stood in the middle of Timna Valley, which is an amazing place. And this is the oldest copper mine in the world. We're speaking about production talking over here something like 6,000 years ago.
Wow.
And you can see around it's a huge surface area. Nowadays is a very popular tourist attraction next to Eilat. Mm. Anyhow, we are just next to King Solomon Pillar. You can see how dramatically is the cliff around us and what influence is to Mother Nature on the landscape. And every stone telling a story. Every stone shows something of the kingdom that used to be, on the emperor, all the people that passing by, all the caravans, convoys of merchants and armies and troops. And it's remain almost the same as it used to be in the history.
In front of us right now, King Solomon's pillars, as Pinny just said, there are these, I don't know how tall are they, they're kind of like, what?
Something like 150 tall,
yeah.
Each unit of the rock. And the most impressive thing is the influence of Mother Nature, like digging inside and making this giant gorges, like splitting the mountain to three different sections. Yeah. And you can climb up those who have enough power and shape.
Not today,
not for us.
Not right now.
We should realize one thing that not all the people knows. The copper as a natural in the nature is a rock, and to make the copper that we know, you have to start kind of a process, and let's make a fire to make the solid rock to kind of a copper liquid, and you need to make a fire over 1,000 Celsius temperature to make it melted and make it liquid.
I mean, it's not the most obvious of things to do, you know, kind of see a bit of rock. In fact, not even see a bit of rock. Go, I know, I'm going to dig a hole, go down there, grab some rock, bring it upstairs, melt it in a fire, make a chunk of copper out of it, and then fashion it into a necklace. Like, how? How did they realise that?
First of all, the knowledge. We are not always know what's going on there, but the knowledge. But beside that, but God help us a bit, because the rock of the copper rock is color green blue.
So it's intriguing.
It's completely different than the brown, yellow kind of sand rock that we have around. And just to compare, you can say that the copper of that time is the diamond of the old times, the diamond of the desert of old times. So just imagine how many ladies would like to have diamonds nowadays.
Yeah. And some boys as well.
Ah, okay.
So that is pretty much it from myself and Dean and our travels here in Israel. We're back at the airport, Ben Gurion Airport, which is just outside of Tel Aviv. No chance for one last minute stop for the nightlife of Tel Aviv, sadly. I just want to say thank you to our guide, Pinny. Thanks ever so much for having us.
Guys, it was great time with you, really. You should come back with your friends, be my personal guest. We still have something to do here.
Thank you.
And to show you. And hope you enjoyed.
Is there, if we were to come back, is there anything that you would kind of go, right, first thing I must show them that we didn't get a chance to do?
We'll take you off the beaten track.
Okay.
Beside the tourist attraction. All the secret places and clubs and so on.
Okay.
Whatever you choose. You know, Tel Aviv is never-ending city, so
Is this the camping in the desert for 3 days that you're telling us about?
Aha, this is challenging. You shouldn't join me, no problem. We'll see your skill in the desert. It should be tough for that.
Thanks ever so much for having us. And remember, if you want to explore Israel for yourself, you can do online at goisrael.com.